We are holding on.
Mem Gimel Amin Aleph, top line.
Okay, so we started talking about the Treifus. We went through that according to Tan and Rabbi Shmuel, we said there were exactly 18 Treifus, no more, no less, and we made an exact list of them. And according to the Tana of our Mishnah, and possibly other opinions as well, there's no specific number. It's whatever goes under the category of Kol She'ein Chaya that's not going to live for very long. Okay, so Oma Ola. So Ola says like this, Ches Minei Treifus Nemru Lo Moshe B'Sinai. There are 8 basic types of Treifus that was said to Moshe Rabbeinu at Har Sinai. As we said, 18, what it is those 18 are subcategories, subdivisions, hello, of these 8. In other words, you could say, so to speak, like these 8 are Ovos, and then within them you have the 18 are Tovos. They are, number one, Nekuva, where an organ has a hole in it, which we had a whole bunch of them in the Mishnah and in the Gemara. We had various cases. So the esophagus has a hole, the heart has a hole, the lung has a hole. So what we're saying is these 8 that Ola is listing for us, these effectively are the others. These are the basic categories. For example, you have a category called Mekuva. The category called where an organ has a hole in it. And then you have the various ones that we mentioned in our Mishnah, the esophagus and the membranes around the brain and the heart and the lung. Is almost. I mean, we said yesterday. We said that we said there are certain exceptions. We said that there is, for example. So usually, Rashi had said right at the beginning of the Mishnah that when we say nekuva, when we say that something has a hole and it's trace, generally speaking, what that means is even the smallest hole. However, we have exceptions. We said, for example, that with the windpipe, that would be a different one, chasura, which we're going to discuss soon. But for example, we mentioned the spleen. So we said that if it has a hole in it, it's chafe, but we'll see later on in the Gemara that there's different rules about that as compared to most other organs about the size of the hole. But in general, yeah. So you have a concept called Mekuva.
The difference between the comma and the Veshet, the 2 different holes, all the same size?
No, so the Veshet, the esophagus, even a small hole is enough to make it chafe. The conna, the windpipe, you have to have a much larger, you have to have most of its circumference is cut.
When you say a hole, it has to be from...
Yeah. That's what we said. Yeah, and we're going to get into this. Going to start getting into the details. But first, okay. So again, we have 8 basic types: nekuva, where something has a hole, upsuka, or where something is cut. Where we said, and then we said in the Mishnah, we had the windpipe is cut more than halfway around, or we had that the spinal cord is cut. The next one is netula, where something has been removed from the animal.
If you have a nekuva, you should not. Obviously, sukkah is also...
Sukkah is something different. That's the thing. Because the difference is, nekuva means you have a hole. Sukkah means you need something more than a hole. For example, again, with the windpipe, a hole is not enough to make the animal trick. Hole in the windpipe, we said, is not enough to make the animal. We've said that already in previous program as well. It would need to be more than 50% around it. Yeah.
Right.
So there you go. So sukkah is when you have that something needs to be, that something is cut all or most of the way through, such as the windpipe or the spinal cord. Netula, you have where something was removed, specifically in our Mishnah we had where the liver was removed. Vachasura. No, in the Mishnah we said if the liver was removed and nothing of it is left. We're going to see soon. We're going to discuss soon. Hold on. We're going to discuss soon. Vachasura, the next one you have is where something is missing.
Okay.
So we had, for example, so kidneys, we said even if both of them are missing, then the animal's kosher. No, chasera, whatever, the Rashi mentions, for example, we mentioned in our Mishnah, that if the lung is chasera, which we're going to say later on, when we start talking about the lung, not that it has only one lung, it means that even it has both lungs, but the lungs have a certain, the lungs are divided into sections called lobes. So if one of them is missing or the number of them is switched around or whatever, that's straight automatically.
It was born this way?
Yeah.
Chasera
means missing. So according to Rashi, the difference between netula and chasura is netula would be where the organ is completely missing. Chasura would be where part of it is missing. According to the Rambam makes a bit of a different distinction that netula means that the animal was born with it and then it was removed afterwards. For example, the liver of our Mishnah. And chasera, whatever, would be also when it's congenitally born that way. In other words, for example, according to the Rambam, it might well be if an animal was born without a liver and somehow managed to live without it, it might not necessarily be a treifa.
because according to the I don't know if it could, but the point
it's
is
written until now and it could be 2 years old.
Yeah, so again, maybe it's like that discussion yesterday about the heart. I mean, but yeah. Okay, so yeah, so that's chasura, krua. Then you have cases where something is ripped. We mentioned in our Mishnah where the muscles that cover the keres, the first large stomach, are ripped, is one example of that. Udrusa, hello. Then you have where an animal is enclawed or attacked by a predator, by a wild animal, which we discussed in the Mishnah about wolves and claw. No. Okay, so the difference is, we're going to learn later on in the Gemara, it doesn't mean, obviously, if the predator dug deep enough that it pierced an internal organ, then the animal is traced because of that. But we're talking about not even that. Let's say the typical thing is a predator, it just breaks the skin, but nevertheless, you have this eris, this poison, this venom, whatever that we talked about yesterday, or bacterial infection, or whatever it is exactly, that itself is a category of traitorous. Nefula, then we have the category called pollen, where we said in our Mishnah that if the animal fell off a roof or someplace high, and its internal organs may have gotten crushed. Ushvura, what nefula means that it fell. And because it fell, the problem is not the falling, the problem is the crushing, right? Ushvura, and the last one is where you have something broken. Specifically, we mentioned in the Mishnah if most of the ribs are broken. We mentioned yesterday also you have also, for example, we talked about that the skull has been cracked or dented or whatever is also in this category of Shvura. So those are the eight major categories, says Ola. And in Shulchan Aruch, by the way, it brings a simon for them of a handy way to remember the eight of them, the phrase don chonak nefesh. Literally means don strangled a soul, but it stands for these eight things. Don is drusa and mefula. Chonak is chasura, metula, and krua. And nefesh is nekuva, psuka, and shvura. So it works out. Okay. The point is, though, the Gemara.
Because
we have them in the Gemara in front of us. Yeah. Okay. The point the Gemara says is, what's the point of Ola's list? I mean, we could derive that ourselves. We could categorize the 18 things of our Mishnah into such categories ourselves. The point is, the Gemara says, la'apuki la'kusa de'rochish ba'papa. Ola wants to tell us, don't include the case that we learned yesterday that rochish ba'papa says that if there's an infection or some kind of damage or whatever to the kidney, that would make the animal trace. Don't include that, says Ola, because that doesn't fit in any of the eight categories that we mentioned. You can't say that it's included in the case. You can't say that eventually it's going to cause a hole and therefore it's in the category of nekuva, because we've said already, even if the kidneys are missing completely, they're not trace, so a hole in them wouldn't make the animal trace either. So therefore, this lakusa, this infection or whatever it is of the kidney, according to Ola, would not be a trefa. Because he's saying only these eight categories, nekuva, psuka, natula, etc. And this case where the kidney has an infection in it, where the kidney is considered, as far as trefas, is not considered a vital organ, for the reason I mentioned yesterday, in fact, in modern times, researchers have found what the Chachamim already knew in their times, that an animal, that a kosher animal can survive without kidneys. The only problem with the only issue with the kidneys is, as we're saying, if there's an infection or something in them that could affect.
Does the animal have two kidneys?
An animal has two kidneys.
Like a human being.
The point is, a human being can live with only one. An animal, we're saying, a kosher animal, a cud-chewing animal, can live without either one. That's the point. So Ola would say, okay, so an infection in the kidney doesn't fit in any of these eight categories. Therefore, he would say it's not one of the traits.
An infection could cause the die?
Well, the point is that according to Rokesh Bapapa, it's not so much the infection. We're not worried about the kidneys themselves, but the infection is eventually going to spread to other organs, and therefore it's going to cause problems.
And therefore,
according to him, it's straight. According to Ola, it's not. Now, the real question is that the Rambam brings and the Shulchan Aruch brings that it mentions this list of Olas, that you have these eight traits, but it also mentions Rokesh Bapapa's din. It also mentions Rokesh Bapapa's din, that an infection in the kidney makes the animal trace, provided the infection reaches a certain point in the kidney. We'll deal with that later on in a dozen blocks or so. But anyway, so how do we reconcile that if the Gemara is saying that Ula disagrees with
with Rachash Bar Papa. Nice. You have the Beis Yosef deals with this, the Ramah, the Bach, and then the Noiser Kalem on Shulchan Aruch.
What can the Ram do in this? Even if they have something wrong with the kidney.
We learned yesterday the halacha is trefa ein achaya. A trefa is not going to be able to live more than 12 months. So therefore, we don't even right now it may be walking around, but sometime within the 12 months, one or another of these 18 things is going to cause it to die. Now, I did mention yesterday, the fact of the matter is, the Marshal says, first of all, we have the opinion that says that Trefa Chaya, but second of all, with modern medicine and with Nishtanu Ativim and all, you can have, but even in those times, you could have one out of a million animals might actually be able to live longer than 12 months. So anyway, the point is, So you have a number of different answers to reconcile. One of them is maybe, in fact, after all, we could squeeze Rachash Bar Papa's rule about the kidney into one of the eight categories that Ulla mentioned, even though the Gemara seems to be implying that they're contradicting each other. Maybe the Beis Yosef talks about that maybe there's two different types of Jerusa, maybe there's a type where it was injured by a wild animal versus the type over here where it's damaged in its kidneys, which is the equivalent, basically, of having been damaged by a wild animal. Maybe it's, and then the Bach says very simply, I mean, they're using this statement of Ola, this as a general way of categorizing the trefus, not to say that, not like the Gemara is saying over here, that Ola is saying it's exclusive, nothing that doesn't belong in these eight is a trefus. The Rambam and the Mechaber, when they're using this list, they just mean it as a handy way to be able to group the trefus. Not to say like Ulla is saying over here that it's exclusive, and therefore we could include Rachash Bar Papa's din as a trefa as well. Okay. Onward. Omer Chia Bar Rava, or Rav really it's supposed to be. Es trefas yesh b'nekuva. So okay, the first one of Ulla's eight categories was nekuva, where an internal organ has a hole in it. So Rav Chia Bar Rava says there are eight cases within that. Namely, we said in our Mishnah, we had the esophagus, the membranes of the brain. For so far, we're not distinguishing between the two membranes. We'll do that later on in the Gemara. Those are two. You have the heart, it's three. The lung is four. The keva, which is the fourth stomach, is five. The dakin, the intestines, is six. The keres apnimi, some part of the stomach, some part of the digestive system, is seven. And then you have, we said, we mentioned in the Mishnah, hemsis and beis hakosis, the second and third stomachs of the animal. But we said, for this purpose, we group them as one, because they have a similar function in digestion. And therefore, that's eight. Im toimar tes, and Chia Bar Rav continues, you're going to argue, what do you mean? What do you mean there's only eight? There's also a ninth one. We said in our Mishnah that also if the gallbladder has a hole in it, then the animal is safe. The answer is mara, Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda, Fatanila. That's not according to everybody. That's only according to Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda says that. The Tanya, as we learn in a Braisa, Nikva Keva Nikva Dakim Trefa. If the Keva, the fourth stomach, has a hole, or the Dakim, the intestines, have a hole, Trefa, Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda, Ma'af Nikva Hamara. Also, if the gallbladder has a hole, so it's only according to him that it's Trefa. According to the other Chachamim, it would be kosher in that case. So therefore, Chia Bar Rav can say that there are only eight that everybody would agree to, basically. Okay, Hilchas Chava Kazayis Mar of a Kokav and Simon. This is Simon with keywords of the next few dinim that we're going to learn. These are all dinim that Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Yosef says. That Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Yosef says in the name of Rabbi Yechanan. So number one, Amr Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Yosef, Amr Rabbi Yechanan, Halacha Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda. The Halacha is like Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda, even though he's only a Das Yachid. The Halacha is like him. A hole in the gallbladder makes the animal chick.
Even without a gallbladder.
So. Nowadays, a person, first of all, again, so you have certain kinds of animals, deer in particular, that naturally don't have a gallbladder, so they're kosher without it because that's the way they normally grow. But animals that normally come with one, yeah, if it's missing, then the animal's straight. That Tosfos had said at the beginning of the parak that any of the organs that we're saying over here, if it has a hole, it's straight. Also, if that particular organ is completely missing, then the animal's straight.
Any signs of hole?
Yeah. Obviously we don't mean a microscopic hole. As usual in halakha, we're only talking about things that you can see with the naked eye.
You don't have to put a needle or anything.
You don't have to put a needle, yeah. You don't have to look at it under magnifying glass. This is relevant to the whole thing about mezuzahs lately. Anyway, whatever, yeah. And basically, if you don't see it, it isn't there, right? After all, I mean, look, you know, you look with enough magnification, anything has a hole in it, right? Because you have spaces between
them. Well, you look on that book, but that
reminds me. Okay, onward.
Okay, so we have this machloikis, that Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda is saying that if the gallbladder has a hole, then the animal is trafe, and you have the Chachamim disagreeing with that. So the question is, my ahad relay chagri le Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda. What are his colleagues, the other Chachamim, what did they answer Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda, where he says that the hole in the gallbladder makes the animal trafe? What was their counter-argument why it should not be trafe? They said like this. You have a pasuk in Eov, and when one of Eov's speeches, where he's complaining about all the tzaras and all the pain that he's having. So we know earlier on in the story. Earlier on in the story, the second time after the Sultan says to Hashem, you know, the only reason why Eov is such a tzaddik is because he's always had the easy life, make things hard for him, and you'll see. And then you'll be able to test what kind of a tzaddik he is. So Hashem tells the Sultan, okay, he made the yadcha, he's in your hand. Ach es nafshe shmer. However, you have to make sure to preserve his life. So in other words, he could cause him all kinds of terrible diseases and problems and whatever. But he has to make sure that's not in such a way that Eov is going to die. So in one of those psukim, in one of Eov's speeches, he says the expression yishpoch la'aretz mirei rosi. He pours out my gall, which is the contents of the gallbladder, my bile, whatever, onto the ground. In other words, apparently there was a hole in his gallbladder. And yet, Vadayin Eov Kayim, and yet he's living through this story and afterwards, after he got back everything that he lost, and he got back his health and everything, he lived for 140 years afterwards, it says at the end of Sefer Eov. So therefore, the Chachamim say, obviously, a hole in the gallbladder doesn't make a person Sefer, and we would assume not an animal either.
No, because the Hashem said that...
Amal Lahem, said Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda, answers to them, in maskir and mice and nissim. You can't prove anything from mice and nissim. In that case, because Hashem gave the Sultan special instructions that you have to make sure that he stays alive no matter what you do, that he lives no matter what you do to him, so that's not a raya. Yeah. Okay. Well, okay, because nevertheless, Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda argues that it is a raya. Okay, in fact, Rashi, by the way, brings in this connection from the Gemara in Bava Basra, where you have the whole sugi over there analyzing the whole story of Eov. The Gemara says that when Hashem tells the Sultan that, it's putting the Sultan in like a catch-22. Yeah, right. It's like telling a person telling a servant, go break that barrel, but make sure none of the wine spills. So the same way, like Hashem is telling the Sultan, yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Every day,
anyway, the point is...
Okay.
The Eloi Temahok, he and the Chachamim say, I can prove to you that in Eov's case, the fact that he was still alive is mice and nissim, and therefore you can't generalize from that. I'll give a proof, because what about another pasuk Eov says? Because we need a further proof. We can have another example of something that Eov complains about, something that happened to him, where even Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda on the face of it will agree that this is enough to make an animal trace, and yet Eov survived it. Namely, in the same capital, he says, Yifalach kil Yosef lo Yachmel. He says, he breaks my kidneys, he breaks my kidneys, and he has no Rachman. So what does it mean, he breaks my kidneys? So Rashi explains that this refers to this lakusa, this infection type thing that we were talking about before, where we said Rachash Bapapa says that it makes the animal trace. So then in that case, so Eov had such a thing happen to him also, and yet he's not such today, so he's still able to live.
The same thing about that.
That's the point. In other words, the Chachamim are saying, so if you see he survived that, he could also survive a hole in his gallbladder because it was mycinus. No proof for regular Hilchos trait. Okay, Tosfos has a different explanation over here, because Tosfos points out that we're going to learn later on in the parak, when we talk about these details of the kidney, what makes it trace and what not. It depends. Basically, it depends what do you find inside the kidney when you cut it open? Do you find pus? Do you find clear fluid? Do you find whatever? The difference is whether the animal is kosher or not. So over here, if he's complaining, Yifalach kil Yosei, who says it was something that even in an animal would make it chafe? Who says it's the kind of infection? Yifalach literally means he breaks open, or like he cuts open. That's the thing. So Rashi understands it to mean, in other words, that his kidneys are infected. However, Tosfos says not necessarily. What it means is like this. Later on in that sugya, when we talk about the kolya, we're going to talk about it is actually possible to kill an animal by striking it in the kidneys. However, the Gemara mentions over there, the difference is that you're also able to treat it. You're also able to give it a medical treatment that it will be able to recover from that. And we said one of the rules of Tzedekah is that it's not, that at least in the times of the Gemara, it wasn't medically treatable. So So therefore, Tosafot says, the point of the question is over here, that Eov is complaining that his kidneys have been affected, whether by disease or whether by whatever. We don't find that any particular refuah was done for him. We don't find later on that it says that Hashem gave him, that Hashem told them to take such and such medicines or whatever and cure him with it. So therefore, that shows, that on the face of it, he should have been a tshefer. And yet he wasn't. So therefore, the Chachamim are saying that's mice and nissim, so you can't prove anything.
What do you comparison from a person to an animal?
Oh, okay. So that's the Tosafot.
Something.
That's true. And Tosafot does mention earlier. Tosafot does mention on Membeis and Mabeis that you do sometimes have. We do sometimes find with certain Tosafot that there are differences between people and animals. However, Tosafot says that at least for some things, we should assume that they're the same. I mean, okay, certain details you would say that not. Tosafot mentions, let's say, for example, when it comes to the membranes around the brain, those might be tougher in a person, and therefore you need more than just a hole in those to make a person trace. You need an actual part of the skull missing as well. But when we're talking about over here, about the gallbladder and about the kidneys or whatever, Pastor Sigmara assumed it's the same thing. Okay. Anyway, Ella Nissa Shiny. Obviously, the answer is a Ness is different. Yeah. And we know there was a Ness over here, because after all, Hashem tells the Sutton, whatever you do to him, make sure you preserve his life. So therefore, that's a special thing. No matter what happens to you, he's going to survive it. But that doesn't necessarily prove that in the usual case, it wouldn't make an animal or a person today. Okay. The Hochanami Nissa Shiny. So the same thing. When it comes to the gallbladder, you could say the same thing. Normally, a hole will make it today, like Rabbi Yosef the Order says. But in this case, it was mice and Nissa. Fine.
No proof.
Well, so in other words, so the Chachamim still maintain their thing, that fine, mice and nissim and all other, you know, still as much as possible, you should try to learn from the Pesukim. However, Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda has his proof. Yes. Yes. Okay. Next. The Omer Rabbi Yitzchak for Rabbi Yosef. Okay. Here's another din that Rabbi Yitzchak for Rabbi Yosef says in the name of Rabbi Yochanan. That's why we're bringing all these things, because they're all from him. So we learned in our Mishnah that if the liver is completely missing, then the animal is treif. Now later on in the next Mishnah in our Perek, which is going to be a long time from now because we have a lot to talk about all the details of treifus. But we mentioned over there that there are cases where the animal is kosher, and one of them is if the liver is missing, but there's a kazayas-sized piece left over of it. We'll deal with the details of that in the Gemara, where that kazayas-sized piece has to be. But anyway, the point is that he's saying the halacha is like the opinion that you need a kazayas. So in other words, even though our Mishnah makes it sound like only if it's completely missing, which makes it sound like even if there's a tiny bit left, it's less than a kazayas, it would be kosher. No, the halacha is you need a kazayas. The question is, did Rabbi Yochanan really say that? That you need a kazayas. We know Rabbi Baba Chana says in the name of Rabbi Yochanan that the halacha is like a sam mishnah. Whenever you have a sam mishnah, it means the halacha is like it. It means that Rebbe set it up so that like that and wrote it as a sam mishnah without a mandamah to say that that's the halacha. Utnan, and we learned later on, Nitlach, and we learned in our Mishnah, Nitlach covered the Nishtayah and a Klum. We said only if the liver is gone and not any part of it is left, Honishtayah Kshayah, implying that some part of it is left, then it's kosher, Afagab Delay Havik Kazayas, even if that piece is not a Kazayas. So therefore, now, the point is, now this Mishnah is a, well, so the point is, now, our Mishnah is a Sam Mishnah. The one on Nun Dalet is also a Sam Mishnah. However, so Rashi explains the point of the question is, if Rabbi Yochanan says halacha k'stam mishnah, why is the next mishnah that mentions the kazayas any stronger than our mishnah? We should say our mishnah implies even if you only have a tiny bit left of the liver left, then the animal is kosher. The next one says a kazayas. Why should Rabbi Yochanan be, yes, they're both stam mishnas, but why should Rabbi Yochanan be assuming that the one later on is stronger than this one?
The answer is
amiroyim ninu v'alibad Rabbi Yochanan. The answer is samachloikas amiroyim what Rabbi Yochanan held. You have Rabbi Yitzchak with Rabbi Yosef, which is who we're quoting over here. He doesn't hold that Rabbi Yochanan said that rule halacha k'stam mishnah. where Rabbi Yochanan wanted to say the halacha is like a particular Mishnah, he would say specifically the halacha is like this and this Mishnah. So therefore, he's not bothered by this halacha kasam Mishnah, what do you have, the contradiction between our Mishnah and the next one, because he would say Rabbi Yochanan never said such a rule. Rabbi Yochanan holds the halacha is like the next Mishnah. Rabbi Yochanan says the halacha is not like our Mishnah, and the halacha is like the next Mishnah, and he never said a general rule halacha kasam Mishnah. Then you have Rabbi Baba Chana saying that Rabbi Yochanan said a general rule halacha kasam Mishnah. But Rashi, so that's the machlokas within what Rabbi Yochanan says. One says that Rabbi Yochanan says a general rule that the halacha is like a stam mishnah, and the other one is that when Rabbi Yochanan wanted to say a particular mishnah, the halacha is like it, he would mention by that particular one rather than making a general rule. So Rashi goes on to explain, sometimes you will have two stam mishnahs that contradict each other. If you have reason to say that one of them is stronger than the other, then Rabbi Yochanan will say that the stronger one the halacha is like. If not, then Rabbi Yochanan has no particular reason to pick one over the other. In this case, our Mishnah and the next one, they're essentially two parts of the same list, because he started off Eiluk Shreifus, and the next one starts off Eiluk Shreifus for the Hema. So there's no reason to prefer one over the other. So therefore, if we say that Rabbi Yochanan never said any, if Rabbi Yochanan said Halach Kassam Mishnah, then we wouldn't say necessarily that he says you need a Kazai. Because we wouldn't have any reason to say that Mishnah is any stronger than this one. Now that's all, that whole explanation is according to Rashi. Tosfos has some difficulties with that, including the question, I mean, if it's parts of the same, usually we have a rule that within the same Masechta, you prefer the later Mishnah, because it means originally Rebbe wrote, let's say there's a Machlokes on this, and later on he decided that Halacha is such and such. So one thing Tosfos says, okay, because these are two parts of the same Mishnah, maybe that rule doesn't apply, maybe that's what the Gemara means over here. Well, that's the thing. We would assume that Rebbe changed his mind between one part of the Masechta and a later one. But here, we're two halves of the same Mishnah. We're not going to assume that. Okay, then Tosfos also says another explanation of the question. And the answer is like this. The question is, if Rabbi Yochanan is saying Halacha Kassam Mishnah, then he has no reason to mention that. He has no reason to specifically mention the Halacha is that you need a Kazayis. Just the very fact that he has to say the halacha is you need a kazayis implies that he doesn't consider that a real stam mishnah. So why not? And the answer is, again, because you have a machlokas among the amoroyim, what Rabbi Yochanan himself has. Okay.
So the point is, though,
that Rabbi Yochanan is saying for us that, well, Rabbi Yitzchak for Rabbi Yosef is telling us that the halacha is like that mishnah that says that you need a kazayis.
Because you could say one mishnah is not specific, it says, and the other one is specific.
Okay, so that's one of the explanations also, yeah. Okay. All right.
You okay?
Yeah. Okay. Next one, De'omar, or really it's supposed to be Ve'omar, because it's a separate statement. Ve'omar Rabbi Yitzchak for Rabbi Yosef, Omar Rabbi Yochanan. Another gene, Rabbi Yitzchak for Rabbi Yosef, tells us in the name of Rabbi Yochanan. And again, basically we're trying to go according to the order of things in our Mishnah over here, but we're mentioning a bunch of these things out of order because they're all statements from Rabbi Yitzchak for Rabbi Yosef in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, and therefore the Gemara is putting them together. Many of them we're going to deal with later on in the parak, some not. Okay. So the Amr of Yitzchak for Rabbi Yosef, Amr of Yechanan, Mara Shenikva v'Kavod Seitamta, if the gallbladder has a hole, but the liver closes up the place where the hole is, so you can see in the picture over here that the gallbladder hangs off the liver. Gallbladder, you can see a color picture over here, you can see a black and white picture over here, that the gallbladder hangs off the liver. You have an area of it where if there's a hole in that part, then if you have a hole in that part, then it can be. It's pressed against the liver, and therefore the liver effectively closes it up. So then that's treva. Then the animal is kosher. That hole doesn't make it treva.
Mara shenikva.
Shenikva, where the gallbladder has a hole, the covered satamta, but the liver closes up the hole because the liver, the hole happens to be in an area of the gallbladder facing the liver, so it's pressed against the liver, then it's kosher. Yeah. But Amr Rabbi Yitzchak for Rabbi Yosef. No. We said before. Hold on. What we're saying is there's a rule with holes. If the hole is sealed to begin with, we're going to deal with soon. Actually, we're going to deal with the whole concept of what happens if a hole heals over. We're going to deal with that soon. But you have a concept that if a hole comes to be in a place where there's a natural closure of it to begin with, then the animal is still kosher. Only if there was a hole, and later on a scar develops over it, then not. So we'll deal with that detail soon. But over here, since it's covered up, it's closed up, by the liver, then you're okay. In fact, one of the Rishonim, Rabbeinu Yohanan, says, "What's the verse? I mean, after all, you naturally have a natural duct that goes from the liver into the gallbladder, because that's how the bile gets into the gallbladder in the first place. Is the liver produces it and then it flows into there. So therefore, if you have another hole between them, big deal. It's no different than like we had about the hemsis and vesicosis, two of the stomachs.
Oh, that's true.
Okay, but you have basically, if you have there shouldn't be extra holes there, fistulas they call them in medical ease, but nevertheless, they don't necessarily make the animal sick. Just like we had in our Mishnah,
there's no difference between the liver covering the hole and some other thing covering the hole.
The difference is, well, on the other side, you don't have anything covering the hole. If you have a hole, let's say over here, then you have the bile is going to leak out into the body and poison it. But if you have it over here, it's not going to be able to leak out because it's pressed against the liver. So therefore, you're good. That's the point. Okay. Now we're going to talk about for a minute the stomach of a chicken. The kurkuvan is the stomach of a chicken. Here's a diagram. Here's a couple of diagrams. So here's how it looks. So here's how the whole thing looks together. You have the esophagus, you have the zephyr, the crop, which we'll deal with later on. You have eventually you get to the stomach. The kurkuvan is called. Now the point you have to realize is, as we're going to see in the discussion over here, the stomach of a chicken or the stomach of any bird is different than the stomach of a mammal, basically because they don't have teeth. So therefore, the stomach itself has to be able to grind up the food. So now the stomach of a bird therefore has two layers. It has an inner membrane, and then outside of that it has strong muscles which between the two of them they grind it up basically.
Any stomach?
Well, no, because that's the thing. A regular stomach, the stomach of a mammal doesn't work that way. The stomach of a mammal doesn't have to grind up anything. It doesn't have to grind up anything. It mixes it with the digestive juices. Of course, it has muscles. Anything in the body has muscles. But the point is, the muscles of the bird's stomach have to be much stronger because they have to actually crush up the food. Okay. So, nikav kurkuvan, the kishalikayim. Suppose that the kurkuvan, which means the inner layer, this inner yellowish layer over here, suppose that has a hole, but the kish is, the other way around. The kurkuvan means the muscular layer, the red layer over here. The pouch is this yellow layer, this inside lining over here. So if the outside muscles have a hole, but the kishalikayim, but the inner pouch, the inner yellowish thing, is still intact, kosher, then the bird is kosher.
This is about chicken only, right?
By any bird.
But that's not
any
a hole. You said a hole is from one end to the other.
That's the point. So iboilahu. So now we have a question. What about the other way around? Nikavakis v'kurkavan kayamai. What about if it was the other way around? What if the inner layer had a hole, but the outer layer was still intact? What would be the din? Toshma. Da'amr abnachman nikav zebalai zeh kosher. Yes. If either one of them and not the other one has a hole, then it's kosher. So similar. It would have to be a whole straight. Well, let's talk a little bit more about that. First of all, before we get to the kurkuvan, let's digress a second to talk about another din involving a different part of the body. So now we're going to talk about the vesh, the esophagus.
Well, the food, right?
That's the food pipe, right? So let's see. Okay. Omer Rav. Rabba, it says on the side, Shnei Otis Yeshloi Levesh. The esophagus has two layers. The esophagus has two layers. Chitzein Odom Upnimi Lavan. The outer one is red. The inner one is white. The idea of it is, let me see if I can find the color picture over here. The idea of it is basically like this: the outer layer of it is red, again because it's muscular. When you swallow something, when you eat something, it goes down the food pipe. It's not just gravity. You can even eat standing on your head, and the food will go to your stomach.
Yeah.
It'll be a little more difficult. But basically, the muscles squeeze it downward, right? So what?
Yeah, sure. If you can. if he can sit on his head and swallow.
Okay, well, I wouldn't recommend trying it, but it is in principle possible. Anyway, the point is, so the outer layer, so the outer layer is red because, like muscle, as muscles usually are, it's red. The inner layer is white because the idea is the inner layer is as slippery, it's like mucus-like, in order to help the food slide down better. So you have two layers of the esophagus, chitin adam apnimi lavan, nikav zeh beloy zeh. If one of them has a hole but not the other one, kosher, then fine. The animal is still kosher.
Same principle.
Yeah, same principle. So the question is, lomali lameima chitin adam apnimi lavan. What is the importance of mentioning the colors of them? What do we care what the colors are? Here, you can see over here, the large thing on top over here is the kana. We're not dealing with that right now. The little thing on the bottom over here is the esophagus.
Okay.
The esophagus shrinks and then expands as you eat food. We'll deal with that in the Gemara too. So here, you see over here the red outer layer, and you see some of the white inner layer. Okay, so why does Rabbah have to point out the colors? The answer is the icholis trefa, because he's also telling us the din. Suppose the colors are switched around, then the creature is trefa.
Wow.
Yeah. So switched around on the face of it. In other words, you could have the inner layer might have been born that way. It might have been born that the layers are switched. And in that case, it actually points out the reason why the animal is trefa is because effectively that's a case of chasera. It's literally missing. You have literally one or the other of the layers that's supposed to be there is missing because it's not going to be able to function. They're switched around, but the point is, therefore, so what do you have? If you have the muscles on the inside and the smooth layer of the mucus can't eat. Yeah.
And one of them missing?
Ah, so okay. So here we're saying that cholif, if the colors are switched around. So you have, actually, there is quite a bit of discussion among the Rishonim. Do we mean only if they're both switched around? Or do we mean even, let's say, what if both of them are red, or what if both of them are white? In particular, also, they talk about one thing is, when it comes to birds, most of the time, it's very hard to tell the two layers. In a bird, in a chicken, for example, the whole thing looks pretty much white. So fine, then that's normal for them. But in animals, so they talk about, the post can talk about, what if both of them are red, for example? Then you might have a different issue. Maybe the inner one became red because the animal was a drusa. We said before that when it gets attacked by a wild animal, then internal organs start turning red from infection or whatever. So maybe it indicates that.
Or blow it on
the blood. No, well, no, because blood would get washed away as the animal eats or drinks.
When they shut the chicken, they look at it?
Usually not. Again, most of these trephis you don't have to check for unless there's a race, unless you have reason to suspect that there's something wrong.
So
lungs you have to check because there's a race, because there's a very widespread thing that lungs have problems.
General, chickens eat because when they do, they work on it, my father's record, they work on it, they pull out the inside, and it's all hanging out, you could see it.
Mm-hmm.
The behemoth, yeah, behemoth is huge, so...
Anyway, you have an argument that some of the posts can make that maybe if both layers are white, then it's okay. Maybe you're only saying over here if it's switched around, the white outside and the red inside, then it's trace. But maybe if you have both of them are white, maybe that wouldn't necessarily make the animal trace. You have the Noisa Kalim argue on that. The Marshall, for example, says, listen, we have later on in the parrot, we say that if there are certain colors, there's certain discolorations in the lungs and the animal trace. You don't find that discolorations in the esophagus make the animal trace.
On
the surface of the lungs, and you can have it. Yeah, because it's certain discolorations. We'll deal with later on in the parak. Certain colors make it trace. Certain other colors, it's kosher. Yeah. Okay. As far as if one of them is missing, I think you have the post can also say no good. It's one thing if one of them has a hole, fine, at least you have the rest of it is there to protect the other layer. But if one whole layer is missing, then no.
That is
correct. Yeah, I think so. Okay, fine. Now what would happen, again, with these two layers of the esophagus, what happens if you have a hole in each layer, but the two holes are in different places? So at different levels, let's say. One's higher up, one's lower down. They're not parallel. We didn't deal with that question.
The hole has to go from the
outside. Yeah, but wait. But on the other hand, you could, 1 second. So the question is actually not, the question is actually on both of the, we just learned that there are two organs that have the two that we're concerned with right now that have two layers. You have the vesht, we said has the red layer and the white layer, and you have the kurkavan, the bird's stomach has also the muscular layer and then the inner yellow layer. Right. It's the equivalent of a stomach by animals, it's called the kurkavan by chickens. Right. So what about if you have a hole in each, you have a hole in each layer, but the two holes are not next to each other. They're on different sides, let's say. So, Alma Mazutra Meshmeda Rapapa, the Vesht Kosha Bekurkavan Pasal. The Mazutra says in the name of Rapapa, if that happens with the esophagus, then the animal will be kosher. But if it happens with a bird, with the kurkavan, then it'll be pasal. The idea is, Rashi explains, why would he say about the kurkavan it's possible? Because he figures like this. What's going to happen? You have like this. With the vesh, with the esophagus, the food just goes right through. So you're not going to have, okay, so what happens? You have a hole in the inner layer. Okay, so some of it might temporarily get stuck over there or whatever, but then, you know, muscular contractions or whatever, it'll pull out and keep on going.
No air coming, just close.
Right. As opposed, well, the kurkavan, you also don't have air coming in per se, but what can happen is because food sits in the kurkavan for a while, getting ground up and digested, what happens is, therefore, you might have some of it leaks out the hole in the inner layer, then it sort of like leaks through between the two layers, and then eventually leaks out the other hole and into the body. So therefore, as opposed to the esophagus, it just keeps on traveling right through. Well, this is where you have a hole straight through. Then obviously it's straight. Then we have a hole straight through both layers. And yeah, this is actually the one. Yeah. So you have a hole over here, for example, in the inner layer. The food that's sitting there for a while starts leaking out through the hole. Then it goes between the two layers, and then eventually it leaks out the other hole. As opposed to the vest, you're not going to have that, because it just travels straight down. However, Ravashi challenges that. He says, Adrabba, you could argue the other way around. Vesht de ochla bay or poya bay, when it comes to the esophagus, where the animal eats with it, and poya with it. Rashi says two explanations of poya. One is that the animal makes noise with it, and the other is that it breathes with it. Now, obviously, the animal doesn't breathe or make noise with its esophagus, but the point is, as the windpipe expands to when the animal is breathing or making noise or whatever, then the esophagus also contracts and expands together with it. That's what, and yeah, it, so not so much absorbed, but like, in other words, as the windpipe is expanding or as air is being forced through it or whatever, it causes the esophagus to shrink,
right.
and vice versa. So therefore, in other words, so the esophagus is always like expanding and shrinking in diameter. Therefore, so therefore it widens at times. Gamdalay, sometimes it shrinks, or pashtalay, sometimes it expands. Zimnin de mahandazin bahadi adabi. So what happens? You have a hole here and you have a hole here, but as the two layers move relative to each other, because they're only held together kind of loosely, then they match up, and then you have a hole going straight through, and you have problems. As opposed to kurkavan, the menach nayach, as opposed to the kurkavan, yes, the kurkavan is very active, but the two layers are fairly tightly together. You don't have, one doesn't move without the other. So therefore, if you have a hole in one part of one, you have a hole in a different part of the other one, it's kidikoi koi. As it stays, it's going to stay. The hole, the food is not going to leak out. The regular stomach doesn't have two layers for our purposes. The stomach of an animal, you have one of the stomachs later on, the basal carcass we're going to talk about, has two layers, but we're not dealing with that yet. Right now we're dealing with organs that have two fairly thick layers, two fairly distinct thick layers that are different colors and all. So that's what we're saying. So therefore, Ravashi is arguing, and the halacha is like him, that with the esophagus, if you have a hole here and a hole here, eventually the holes may match up, therefore it's safe. As opposed to the kurkavan, they're not going to match up because wherever one layer goes, the other layer goes with it. They move together. And that's, in fact, the halacha. So I'm sure what Noach mentions, if you have, let's say, with the vesht, in one layer you have a hole on this side, let's say, and in the other layer you have a hole on this side, fine, then that's not a problem. They're never going to move so much to be able to come together. But if you have them...
You mean what, it's not true?
But then it wouldn't be true.
At the same level?
But one on one side and one, if you have on the outer layer on this side and in the inner layer only on this side, then it's not safe because there's no way those holes are going to come together.
Partial.
Yeah, but any time where there's reason to worry about that they might end up overlapping, then it would be safe. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Omelet of Achab, and in this connection, Omelet of Achabred of Yosef or Ravashi, Hochi Amrinan Beshmeid Mazut or Omelet Beshmeid or Papa Kavasar. You should know that even though we said that Mazut or Beshmeid or Papa had said the other way around, that such a thing with two holes would be kosher in the esophagus and trace in the Korkavan, Ravashi argues in on that. So Rav Achabred of Yosef says, you should know we, in our yeshiva, we say that Mazut said in the name of Papa exactly the way you said. But therefore, that everybody agrees on that, and that's in fact that confirms what you say, and that's in fact the halakha. Okay. But Omar Rabbah. So therefore, so that's it. So when it comes to the Kurkavan, if you have a hole here in one part and a hole here in the other part, it's not a problem because they're never going to move and be next to each other.
Yeah.
But with the Vesh, you would have a problem because as the two layers expand and contract and then move against each other or whatever, yeah. Okay.
Even if they're very far apart.
So again, they're very far apart, like on opposite sides, then we can be maple. Then post them on different levels, yeah, it depends how high and low the levels are. I'm not sure about that. I think the post can say, like, if you have one of them at the top and one of them at the bottom, then fine. But it's, yeah.
Yeah, but to watch the animal live.
Yeah, but
you can.
So we have to be able to evaluate. Yeah. Okay.
Fine.
V'omer Rabba. Then Rabba says another din, a very basic din. A very basic din in Tzrik. Krum sha'olam machmas maka b'vesht enei krum. If you have a scar that formed after that, where there was a wound in the vesht, in the esophagus, and afterwards it healed over, it's ain't a krum. It's not a valid krum, and you can't say that the hole has been healed over, and therefore the animal is kosher. Now, why not? So therefore the animal is free. Now, Rashi says two reasons for it. One, well, on the face of it, Rashi is saying two reasons. In fact, you have the postgame deal at some length. The Primogodim, for example, talks about, is Rashi basically giving one reason over here, or is he giving two reasons? One idea is that this kind of thing, a scar that forms on that, like that, it's not going to last. It may stay there for a while, but it's not going to be a permanent seal. It's eventually going to open up again. Then Rashi says another thing, when we have where there was a seal to begin with, like we said before about the gallbladder and the liver, then fine. But if you have, because then the animal never became traced, because as soon as the hole developed, you right away had a seal for it at that same moment. But here, where you had a hole, and later on a krum developed over it, it means the animal was traced for a while, and there's no such thing, an animal being traced and then going back to being kosher. Traced is traced. It's irreversible. So again, so you have the Prima Godim and other Acharonim talk about, is Rashi giving two reasons over here, or is he giving one reason? Okay, but anyway, so this comes up in a lot of areas of Trefus that you have where there's a hole in some organ, and later on it heals over, and you still have a real problem with it. That's the never... Tirchus is something else. Tirchus is where you have strings that are hanging off the rea, that are off the lung, that attach to other parts of the lung or to other areas inside the chest or whatever. That's a different thing. We're going to talk about later on. Rashi and Tosfos argue about what exactly it is that makes a sircha treif. You're right. Rashi mentions the same concept, that because it means there was a hole there and now it got plugged up with the sircha, and therefore it's the same problem. Tosfos has a different explanation of what the issue of sirchas is. But anyway, it comes up in a lot of different areas. You know, some years back, there was the whole question about the kashrus of milk, because they have this case where they have to puncture a hole in the animal's stomach in order to release extra gas, and then they seal it up with stitches. And based on this, it might be that the cows are traced in, because krum shalom achnasnaka. So yeah, there was a whole discussion back and forth among the Rabbanim at that time, what the deal with it is. Eventually, nowadays, they have other methods that they use that don't cause problems with trephis. They feed the animals certain pills to break down the gas, or they do other things to whatever. So therefore, so the problem has largely been dealt with as far as kosher milk is concerned. But yeah, with that said, but
because the animal is safe,
the milk would be trace as well, right? Right, because in general, milk, yeah, call a yotzim and a tome, whatever comes from a tome animal is itself tome also.
So there's a cow, and all of a sudden you see that it has an obvious to the eye, there's a question about it, then all of a sudden
you can't use the milk unless you shecht it and checked it. Well, yeah. Mm-hmm. So the fact is, I mean, most animals don't have tzreifus, so they have a cheskas kashrus in that regard, so therefore we can drink milk without having to worry about that ordinarily, but yeah.
A big farm, and they'll have a fight.
Right. With that said, by the way, you have Rishonim in particular, the Ra'ah, who hold that this rule about a krum only applies in this case. We're saying over here about the vesht. And one other thing, I think later on the Gemara mentions about the lung, that you have a similar thing, that if you have a wound that healed over, then it's no good. He holds, the Ra'ah holds, that does not apply to other internal organs. Most of the other Rishonim disagree with him on that. So
which one? The Ra'ah,
Rav Aaron Halevi. He lived in the time of the Rashba, and he regularly argued with him in halacha. In fact, he had. The Rashba wrote a sefer on the halachas of kashrus, on the halachas of shkita and treifus and whatnot, and called it Torah Habayis. Then the Ra'ah wrote his own sefer to argue with many of the Rashba's conclusions, and called it Bedek Habayis, like checking out the house, or like the cracks in the house. And then the Rashba wasn't going to let it go unanswered. He wrote another book called Mishmeres Habayis, like guarding the house, to defend his opinion. Except the funny thing about it is, the Rashba wrote that sefer Mishmeres Habayis. He published it anonymously. He published it in a printing in his time yet, but whatever. He had it copied out anonymously. He didn't want people to know that he's the author. So how do we know he's the author? Because later on, in one of his chuvas, he writes, as I wrote in Mishmeres Habayis, like he let it slip by mistake, so therefore everybody found out. So that all regularly argues with the Rashba. So he holds that this rule of krum sha'ol machmas naka only applies in the specific cases that the Gemara mentions, it by the vesh, and I think by the lung. But everybody else, including the Rashba, disagrees with him on that. V'omer Rabba says another din, vesh ein loy b'dika mevachutz ela mevifnim. This we had in the previous perek. We talked about this concept. If you have a possible problem with the esophagus, that there may be a hole in it, you can't check it from the outside, only from the inside. Why is that? Rashi says, because the outer layer, we said before, is red. So if there's blood on it, you're not going to notice it. And also the Mephoshim say, by the same logic, if there's a hole in it, it's going to be harder to notice. Yeah. So the Gemara says, well, my nafkamina, you know? Okay, what's the relevance of knowing that particular thing? What would be a case where you have to check the vesht? So the case would be l'sofek drusa. If you have an animal with the surface, whether it was attacked by a predator. But later on, in our perek, later on Gimel, on Nachman Beis and Gimel, we're going to talk about the whole issue of Jerusa and all the details about when what happens to the animal and about all the cases. In particular, the Rambam points out like this. Jerusa is really the only category of all, we had all those eight categories before. Jerusa is really the only one of them that explicitly says in the Pasuk, so therefore, we have to be machner with spekus in it more than we do with other areas of treifus. The other categories of treifus, we do have many times that we're machner because of a sofek, but we also have cases where we can be makel for one reason or another, and not drusa. Drusa in general, sofek is yes. So therefore, say now we're going to have later on, we're going to have yes. So we're going to have a case later on, for example, where you're going to have a case. You have a case. Later on, for example, Rashi brings from the Gemara over there. But let's say you have a lion went into an area where there are cows, let's say, or predator went into a place where there are chickens or whatever, where the attacker is quiet and the cows or the chickens or whatever are making noise. So you have a suffix. Did it attack them or not? That's suffix durusa. So now the din is that when you have an animal with a suffix, whether it was drusa, what you have to do is after you shecht it, you have to check carefully throughout the whole body to check whether there's any redness anywhere, which again, the redness would be caused by this poison that we're talking about that would have been deposited by the predator's claw.
I agree that the poison makes it red.
Yeah. So there, right. Teeth we'll deal with later on, but not right. So now again, you have the same problem. So the same problem. If the outside of the vest is red, if there's any redness in it, if there's any infection or whatever in it, you're not going to notice it. Therefore, the only place you can validly check it would be the inside. So in fact, the Gemara says, "Ahi sofik drusa da soy la kamei derabba." There was a case of an animal that was a creature rather that was a sofik drusa. We'll talk in a second whether it was an animal or a bird. That was brought to Rabba. They had a suffix whether it was a drusa or not. So now it needs to be checked. By the way, with this, as in many other things that Amma mentions in Shulchan Aruch, we don't have the expertise nowadays to do that kind of checking. So when you have a suffix like this, drusa, or any of the other cases that we're going to have in our perek that you have to check, in general, there are certain rare cases where we say that we can still check it, but in general, we say, for spaces like that, we have to make it. Yeah.
Okay. Today we could with the X-rays.
Maybe, but today maybe we could with X-rays. I don't know. But once the Ramah establishes, the halacha is established that way. Yeah. Okay. So, have a kabodikli rabble of vesh me avroi. The rabba is checking on the outside of the vesh to see if there's any of this redness. Amalei Abayas. Abayas says, what are you doing? You yourself, Rebbe, just told us that you can't check the vesh on the outside. You have to dab wine. You yourself are doing the outside. Afke Rabba. So sure enough, Rabba turned the vesh inside out, Ubadke, and started checking the inside. The Ishtakachalei Tre Kote Dama, and he found on it two drops of blood, which shows that that's where the poison got in and started causing redness and then problems. But Tarifa, and sure enough, he said the animal is Tre.
He reminded him of the
law. So it wasn't that he reminded him, the Gemara says, V'Rabba Nami L'Chaduri La'Abayahu Deboi. Why did Rabba do it the wrong way to begin with? In order to sharpen Abaya, like to test Abaya, is he going to know to be able to point out what the right way of doing it is? And sure enough, Abaya passed the test. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So what was the situation over here? So Rashi explains that this could have been either a bird or an animal. Now we know we learned previously in previous parakim, we said that with an animal you have to check both simanim. So on the face of it, with an animal, you have no way of doing it. Because what if you happen to shech the vesh in the place where it was damaged by the drissa? So Rashi says, it's still not a problem because if you have something where you're not sure there may be a hole in it someplace, okay, you never know. The hole might happen to be in the particular place where you shecht it. Here, what it is if you have redness in the area that was affected by the poison from the attacker, it's not just going to be one tiny little red thing. It's going to be a large enough area that wherever you shecht in the vest, you'll find evidence of it if it's there. So therefore, Rashi says,
you
find little spots, but apparently they were big enough. Rashi is saying that nevertheless, you would be able to check it even after the animal was shechted. Even if you happen to shech through that particular area, you'd still be able to see it afterwards. Tosfos argues with that, and Tosfos says that no, apparently the situation is that specifically over here we're talking about it was a bird. Since you only need to shech one simon, so good. We said in the previous pedic, what you do is you check the corner to make sure that wasn't damaged. Then you check that one. Then the vesh is still intact, and therefore you can flip it inside out and check it. Alma Ula, another din, Ula says, Yoshev lekoit bevesh, if a thorn gets stuck in the animal's esophagus, so Rashi says it ate a thorn, for example, it got stuck. So now let's say you don't see it sticking out from the outside, but if it was sticking out all the way through the esophagus, of course, the animal's trait, nothing to talk about. But here we're talking about, you don't see it sticking out from the outside. You also, though, after you shecht it, you don't find blood on the inside. If you find blood on the inside, yeah, it would mean that it punctured that inner layer while it was alive. But here we're not sure. Okay, Tosu says that maybe if you would find blood on the inside, so what? We said before, if one layer has a hole, it's not a problem. Anyway, the point is, Ola says, in that case, he says the animal is kosher. You don't have to worry that hivri. Now, what does hivri mean? So Rashi gives two explanations. One is that it means maloshen bari. We said before that the scar that forms after an injury is no good. Ola is saying, according to the first explanation of Rashi, you don't have to worry that the thorn did puncture through both layers and then maybe the outer layer healed. You don't have to worry about that. You don't find a hole in the outer layer, therefore you're good. Rashi's second explanation is that Hivri means that it pierced all the way through. And Rashi brings from a pasuk in Yechezkel where we see that shodesh being used. So according to that second explanation, Ola is saying that you don't have to worry that the thorn pierced all the way through from the inside. Ola is saying that you don't have to worry about it. Well, right. Well, the question, okay. Now, Doras Chatichas, the second Tmeya Simon. So we're going to have, now we have another Simon of key phrases, key words, from places where we're going to ask on Ola, on Ola's din. So the first question is, Ola, Maishnam is Safak Durusa. According to Ola, why should it be any different than this case of Safak Durusa? We just said before that if a lion goes in over there and it wasn't making noise, you have to be Choshesh that it attacked one of them. And why shouldn't we say the same thing over here, that you should have to be Machmir, that it might have healed over or it might have pierced through? And again, on the outside layer, you can't see whether there's a hole or not.
So why not?
The answer is, Kasava Ola in Choshen L'Safak Durusa. You know what? As a matter of fact, Ola holds, you don't have to worry about Safak Durusa. You actually have a machlokas about it later in our parak. You have machlokas of Avin Shmuel, whether you have to worry about Safak Durusa. Ola holds like the opinion that you don't have to.
What's the reason?
OK, Okay, well, we'll deal with it later. But the point is, there is such an opinion. So Ula is entitled to follow it. Now, the fact is, the halacha is we do hold a suffix Yerusha. And that leads the Rishonim into a number of different opinions. Is the halacha like Ula over here? On the face of it, based on the Gemara over here, it sounds like it can't be, because it sounds like Ula is only doing it because he says, I don't hold a suffix Yerusha. So we hold a suffix Yerusha, therefore we should have to worry. But you still have some Rishonim. Again, it also depends on, you have the two different explanations of Rashi. What is Ula saying we don't have to worry about? Is it that we don't have to worry that it healed, or is it that we don't have to worry that it may have pierced through all the way and we just can't see the hole over there? That makes for a difference among the Rishonim. What exactly do we hold the halacha is like him or not? One interesting thing that a couple of the Acharonim point out, the Alphabet Ever brings it also in Hilchot Shreifas, we have a couple of the simonim of Hilchot Shreifas that are extant in the Alphabet Ever Shulchan Aruch. He says, now later on in the Perek, we're going to talk about a similar kind of thing. You have another organ that has two layers, namely the Beis HaKosis. You have the second stomach, the Beis HaKosis, the reticulum, it's called in medicalese. It has all these cup-shaped things inside it, so it also effectively has two layers. So, and you can have a case where you have something that makes a hole in one layer, but not in the other. But the difference is the one difference some of the posts can point out is with that one, because with that one, it's very possible what could have happened is imagine you have a thorn or a nail or something that pierces through it. What could conceivably happen is that here's what it is with that stomach. Yes, it's moving around the food or whatever, but there's nothing that would be likely to push the thorn back in such that you could say, well, now we found it's only through one layer and maybe the other layer healed over. No, we wouldn't say that. As opposed to by the vesht over here, there's a real possibility that, again, as the vesht expands and contracts, as we said before, so you could have originally the thorn pierced all the way through both layers, but then as it expands and contracts, the thorn or whatever moved back, and then now it's only in one layer, and meanwhile the other layer healed over. So therefore, with the vesht, there's more of a concern about that than there would be with the beis hakosis.
So that's what moves on
much more than the rest. So again, so you have different opinions. Right. So you have different opinions of Rishonim whether we hold like Ula or not. Okay. So the question is, you have different opinions among the poskim. Okay. Next, Umay Shno Mishtecha Tichas Achas Shol Chela V'Achas Shol Shomen. Okay, going back to Ula, he's saying you don't have to worry over here that the thorn may have made the animal trace, but why not? Why should it be any different than the case where you have two pieces of fat in front of you? One is Chela, which you're not allowed to eat. The other one is Shomen, which you're allowed to eat. And you're not allowed to eat one of them because you're not allowed. And in fact, if you eat one of them, you don't know which one. You have to bring an Ashram Tolu.
They look the same.
Well, they look pretty much the same. I mean, they're both fat. We'll learn later on. No, not necessarily. No, we'll deal later on in the Masechta. We'll deal with what the difference is between them. But the fact is, they're not easily recognizable. Again. Okay. So anyway, so the point is, David, you can't say I can eat one of them and I don't have to worry about the suffix. Why is Ula not concerned about the suffix over here? The answer is because you could say Hosam is chazik isura. Because the difference is over there. You have a chazaka that there is an isur over there. You know for a fact that one of these pieces is chela. As opposed to over here, in general, animals have a cheskas kashrus. You usually have a cheskas kashrus that most animals do not have trace. So therefore, so that's different than that case where you know for a fact that one of these pieces is chela.
So it's a suffix kashrus.
So therefore, in other words, so it's a different kind of stuff. And Tosfos points out, even let's say it was one piece of fat, which you don't know if it's chelav or shuman. Okay, you don't have a cheskas isur, but you also don't have a cheskas heter. As opposed to an animal over here has a cheskas heter, that there's no treifus in it. Oh, that's, by the way, another consideration that some of the posts can deal with as far as whether the halacha is like Ula. It gets into the question we dealt with in the previous parak. If the animal has a hole in its esophagus, does that make it treifa or does it make it nevela? We dealt with that back on Daflam and Beis. Now, if you say it makes it a nevela, that's a whole different thing, because an animal, while it's alive, does not have a chazaka of being kosher as far as issues involving shchita, because it's Eivim and Achai. Shchita, we say, yeah, it's not just good enough that you have a chazaka that the shchita was good. You have to know for a fact the shchita was good. So if you say that it makes it a nevela, then you can't hold like Ola. As opposed to if you say that a hole in the esophagus only makes it safer, then you can have an animal have a cheskas kashrus that most animals don't have.
Make it in the veil.
That's what we said. We were discussing before.
The hole,
So we said one way of looking at it is that a hole in the esophagus or a large enough hole in the windpipe doesn't just make the animal a trapher, it actually makes it an avela. Schitter wouldn't help for such an animal. As opposed to, you could say that's the, yeah.
You don't know until that's the
second. No, of course not. But the point is, the difference would be, what one difference would be between nevela and shefa would be, is the animal matame after it's dead. If it's a nevela, then a person touches it or carries it, or in the case of bird, eats it, eats tame. If it's shefa and it was shechted, then not.
So just to know, meaning if they already shechted it, then they're tame.
No, but that's the point. So the person would agree. The person shechted this animal. If, let's say, now after the shechita, he discovers that there was a hole in the vesh, then yeah, he'll be tamei. But if he finds that, if we say it's a nevela, yeah. Okay. Next, umay shnomi ashechet b'sakem inimtak guma. What about the case you have a person shechted with a knife, and at where beforehand he had checked the knife, made sure that it's sharp and smooth and everything, and after he shechted it, he didn't check the knife, and later on we find there's a problem with it. And we say that it's suffix, whether it was a proper shechita, and the animal was nevela. And the sakin, he shechted with a knife and nimtzes kaguma, and it comes out to have a dent in it, to have a nick in it. The answer is hosnis yalad l'ruusa b'sakin. Yeah, but the difference is they are exactly that. You find afterwards that the knife has a nick with it, so therefore, you didn't have a chazaka at the beginning, because again, the animal doesn't really have a chazaka that the shechita was done properly, because the shechita has to be the animal doesn't have a chazaka of being mutter from shechita while it's alive, even a chai. So you have to, so therefore, the sakin itself, you can't really say it's not really a chazaka. Yeah, but on the other hand, you have a reyusa, you have a problem. Reyusa. Yeah, you have a reyusa, that's a problem. So therefore, like that damages the chazaka. So therefore, no, so that's the point. So therefore, Ula would agree in that case, the animal is today, for Vela rather, whatever, as opposed to, he could say, in our case, if a spoon over here, he could say, nevertheless, the animal is kosher, because it has a cheskes kashrus as far as treifus, whereas an animal doesn't have a cheskes kashrus as far as problems and shit.
What happens if you look at the sakin and you shech the two animals, one after the other?
Then you have a suffix on both of them.
Both of them.
Yeah. We talked about that earlier in the fact. Yeah. Okay. What about another challenge, the Gemara says, "Umay shnami suffix tumah b'rishos ha'yachid disfeke tumah." Why would Ula say this is any different than the case we have a suffix in rishos ha'yachid of a person whether he became tumah or not? And the din is disfeke tumah. There we're machmir and we say that he's tumah misuffix. So why shouldn't we say the same thing over here?
We say
if a person is in Rosh Hashanah Yachad and he has a suffix whether he became Tomei, then he's Tomei. So by the same logic over here, we have a suffix whether this animal is Tzreifa. Why shouldn't we say it's Tzreifa? Yes, Gemara says, V'li Taimech, nu, and according to your own Svara, Nidam Yil HaSuffik Tomei Rosh Hashanah Rabin, the Tzreikai Tahar. Why are you comparing it to Suffik Tomei Rosh Hashanah Yachad? You could equally well compare it to Suffik Tomei Rosh Hashanah Rabin. We're Tzreikai Tahar, where the suffix is Tahar.
Ella, no.
The answer is Hasan Hilchas Gemiri Lami Soita. The answer is Tumah V'Tara is a whole Tumah and Tara is a whole different thing. You have a specific halacha L'Moshe Mitzinai that we learn from the case of Soita. That's by Soita. She suffered. Because of the suffix, she tummy to her husband until she drinks the Soita water, and there it's in Rosh Hashanah Yachid because you only have her and the guy together over there. That's where we learn the whole concept of Suffolk Toma B'Rishos HaYachid and Suffolk Toma B'Rishos HaRab. We learn it from the Soita. So therefore, so that's it. For Hosn Chosek Miru Lami Soita, we're learning it from Soita. It's not, you can't necessarily use that as a basis to, there's no time for it. It's just, it's a Gzeres HaKosov. It's just that's how it is. Because this is the Soita, by definition, is not B'Rishos HaRab.
Exactly.
That's the point. That's where we learn the concept of Suffolk Toma B'Rishos HaRab is Tahar. We also learn other dinim from it. For example, you have another angle on that whole thing, is it depends whether yesh by das lishol. This difference of Rosh Hashanah Yachad and Rosh Hashanah Rabim, the Gemara mentions in a number of places, depends whether we're talking about somebody or something that has the das that you can ask them what happened. Meaning, in other words, for example, there's a difference between an adult and a child. There's a difference between a person versus a keli or whatever. Yeah, all these things we learn from the Sota, because the Sota has das lishol. You could ask her, did you become Tomei or not? So therefore, so the point is, that's a special case. You have a halacha like that. You can't derive from that for our case over here to ask on Ola why over there it's Tomei, the suffix, and over here not.
Yeah, by your choice, you got two people. Over there, Rosh Hashanah Rabin is only
Rosh Hashanah Rabin means three people or more. As long as you have three people or more, it's called the Rosh Hashanah Rabin.
Okay. What's a Baba Soita?
That's the point. Baba Soita, you only have two.
You only have two.
That's the point. Therefore, that's called Rosh Hashanah. Three people would make a Rosh Hashanah.
Yeah.
It's not the same as Rosh Hashanah as far as Shabbos necessarily. No, the it's a different definition.
So Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, not Shabbos, is just three people.
Yes. Yeah.
So that it can be within a home, you can have three people. Mm-hmm. Rosh
and that's fine if you have a Suffolk Torah in a house where there are three more people, then you're Torah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay. Continuing this discussion, Yosef Ahume Rabbanan Kamed Rav Kahana, one of the Chachamim was sitting in front of Rav Kahana as a Talmud, the Yosef Akama, so he was sitting and saying about this whole discussion that we just had about the thorn getting stuck in the esophagus, Nimseis Itmar. That din is actually talking about a case just where you find a thorn in the esophagus even if you don't find it stuck in at all. Then that's when Ula would say that you can say the animal is kosher. But he says, if you find it stuck in, then he's saying, Ula would say that you do have to be choshesh. Or at least we would say, the halacha is, you have to be choshesh, that it might, and therefore it's straight. Right. Almost the Rav Kahana, however, Rav Kahana says to the other Chachamim, don't listen to what he's saying. It's the other way around. Yoshav Itbar, what Ula is saying is the case where you find it stuck into the wall of the esophagus.
Then
Ula is still saying it's kosher, as long as it didn't actually go all the way through. Avon Nimseis, but if you just found it in there, lo yitzrich. One second. Avon Nimseis, because that's what Ula said, because he said that he's not worried about Sophic Dura. So it's about the same logic. He's not worried about this. Avon Nimseis, lo yitzrich leila Ula. But Rav Kahana says, if you just find the thorn in the esophagus and it's not stuck into anything, then you don't have a problem. Lo yitzrich leila Ula. Then Ula doesn't even need to say that the animal is kosher. Dekulu chevi bir yasa kosi achon, because after all the animals out there in the wild eat thorns. And they don't become straight from it. So therefore, in other words, if you just find a thorn in the esophagus, then Ula doesn't even need to tell us that it's kosher. Obviously, it's kosher. Ula's chiddush is, even if it's stuck in, Ula is saying you don't have to worry that it may have pierced all the way through and or that it may have healed over. If it's placed in, then of course, and then for sure it's kosher, right? So again, we have the machlokas of Shoinim and then the machlokas as it comes out in Shulchan Aruch, whether the halacha is like Ula or not. So that affects the question of whether in fact we say the animal is kosher in that case or not. You have different opinions among the poskim. So I think you have the Mechaber versus the Ramah, bring the two different opinions, whether you can say that the Alter Rebbe actually brings four different opinions in that regard, because you have as far as the Vesht, and you have as far as the Beis HaKosis, and you have different angles on it exactly. So therefore you have a whole discussion about it. And again, so you have different poskim. Here you have unusually, a little bit unusually, the Mechaber, but maybe it's not so unusual in Hilchos Treifas, I guess, but the Mechaber brings the opinion that's strict and says that it's straight, that the halacha is not like Ula, which is the opinion of the Rashba, for example, I think. And then Amma brings the opinion of the Rosh, who's Meiko and says the halacha is like Ula. If you find a thorn stuck into the wall of the esophagus of that. Okay. Yeah.
But when the animal eats all along, it's very possible it's shalobi or something like that.
Fine. If we don't find it, then we don't have to worry about it. The point is, again, either we're talking about, according to this Talmud of Rav Kahana, we're talking about that the reyes found the thorn in there after shechita. So therefore, there's a possibility that maybe it pierced and then healed over or whatever. And according to Rav Kahana, we're saying the concern is not if you just find it in there. The concern is only if you actually find it stuck into the wall of the esophagus. Jerusalem means where the animal literally means clawed. No, literally it means something like clawed. It means that it was attacked by
another animal.
Is that it was attacked by not just by any other animal. It was attacked by specifically by a wild animal, and we mentioned in the Mishnah, wolves and hawks and other lions and whatever, and therefore eagles, and the Gemara establishes later what happens is that they poison gets in from those claws into the victim, and therefore it'll eventually cause internal organs to get infected or whatever and develop holes, and therefore it'll be
chased.
Yeah.
Whether it happened. So nails, human nails, not.
Human nails, not, right. If they pierce deep enough to actually pierce some vital organ, that's different.
Yeah, yeah.
But we're talking, yeah. Which, again, Jerusalem says, yeah, the whole venom concept. Out of it.